This is James Robertson, Syncom Smalltalk Product Evangelist, bringing you another talk from the European Smalltalk Users Group meeting held in Amsterdam, the Netherlands, in August of 2008.
Let's pretend that this is real. Let's say this real.
Here's Tyson and Storm at ESO 2008 talking about model-driven development.
My name is Tyson Storm. I work at CWI. And before I start, I would like to say that on behalf of CWI, we are quite honored to have ESO here this week. And I must say, I'm quite honored that I can present some of the work done at CWI here this very day. So, first, I say something about myself. Well, I work at CWI. I'm a researcher there. In a part-time fashion, I also teach at the University of Amsterdam in a Master of Software Engineering. There I teach software evolution and software construction. My interests are basically software evolution and version control and that kind of stuff. And on the other hand, programming languages and especially domain-specific languages. Today I'm going to talk about a piece of technology that can be used to create or evolve or test domain-specific languages. The title of this talk is therefore Using Meta Environment for Model-Driven Engineering, for it is my opinion that model-driven engineering is not just defined by UML-based stuff, but also includes other approaches. And I hope I will I've shown you this after this, these three quarters that this is indeed the case. So, what actually is this meta environment? Well, it's a programming environment for languages. Just like you could say that Smalltalk is a programming environment for Smalltalk, this is a programming environment for different kinds of languages. And we will see that this has quite radical effects on how you how such an environment comes about. There are basically two halves in the meta environment. There are two meta languages that are called ASF plus SDF. Together they make up the formalisms that can be used to create programming languages. Not just domain-specific languages, but any kind of computer languages. The ASF part stands for algebraic specification formalism. This sounds really formal and old-fashioned. Well, it's a very old name, but well, that's the way it is. And the second part is SDF, which is the syntax definition formalism. And I will show examples of both formalisms in due course. So, I thought long about how I would introduce this meta environment to this small talk audience. In the end, I came up with one way of doing it, namely by analogy. So I will now try to explain the meta environment and its concepts in counterpoint to small talk. And I'll start with one of the basic axioms of any small talk system, that everything is an object. Well, we all know that, what that means in this conference. What does this mean in the meta environment? Well, everything is source code. This may sound surprising since, well, in any programming environment you would expect that everything is source code. But here, everything means the objects of computation. You compute with source code. So, in fact, that's why it's called the meta environment. There is basically no level below the meta environment. There is only meta programming. Source code is parsed, and the result is a parse tree. And we call these things terms, just as in algebra you can add one term to another. So you can, that's one of the algebraic remnants there. So concretely, I hope that this picture is readable.
No.
No? Well, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's clear that it's a tree, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So terns are trees, and what kind of trees? They are forest trees, and not just abstract syntax trees. They are abstract syntax trees that includes all information of the source text, so including comments, white space, and so on. And as an example here, I've written down a little piece of Smalltalk, and the parse tree you see there is what you get when you parse this piece of Smalltalk using my grammar. So a second axiom of Smalltalk is that every object has a class. And in the meta environment, since we're dealing with source code, you could say that, well, all source code has syntax, obviously, one would say. And in the meta environment, one defines the syntax of these source codes by defining context-free grammars. We have an elaborate parsing technology that helps you to define, defined grammars in an easy and declarative way. So this is the SDF part, by the way, of the meta environment. It's similar to EBNF, only the predictions are reversed, also an historic artifact. It allows fully modular grammar specifications, and that's possible because the formalism supports arbitrary context-free grammars. And arbitrary context-free grammars are closed under composition, so you can put take two context-free grammars, put them together, and you get again a context-free grammar. This is not the case for other parsing subclasses. The parsing algorithm to parse these languages is a generalized LR parsing, and it has integrated lexical features, so there is not a separate scanning phase. And because that's one other thing, the consequence of supporting arbitrary context-free grammars is that you may write ambiguous grammars. And for that reason, SDF has a number of disambiguation constructs that can be used to prevent these issues. So as an example of SDF, I don't expect you to completely read this, but you may recognize that this is might be the grammar of Smalltalk meta declarations or a part. And actually, this is part of the grammar that I used to parse the Smalltalk expression in the previous slide. Okay, so every object has a class. That was the previous action of Smalltalk. The next action is all computation occurs through messages. Well, we know since this morning that this may not be the case in Smalltalk. In a complete sense, but well, the idea is clear. In the meta environment, it's not an object-oriented system, so computation happens in a different way. And the way we compute with parse trees, terms, is by transformation. So the only thing that you have in the meta environment for computing stuff is transforming source code. This may sound completely nuts and radical, but you will see that you can do a lot of interesting stuff with just this notion. These transformation steps of source trees are specified using rewrite rules. This is the ASF algebraic specification formalism. You write rewrite rules, they have the left-hand side, there's the concrete syntax pattern, a parse tree is matched, and you return another parse tree. On the left there, I have shown some examples. For instance, the basic algebraic laws that everybody knows, like x plus 0 is x equals to x, x times 1 equals to 1, etc. So on the left-hand side, on the equal side, you have a piece of source code. On the other hand, on the right-hand side of the equal sign, you have another piece of source code. The other examples show that because we have these arbitrary context-free grammars, you can write these rewrite rules on arbitrary languages, not just basic algebraic rewrites. So for instance, the middle part with the if statement normalizes an if statement with a negation in the condition, and returns an if statement with the two, the can clause and the else clause reversed. And the last example shows how you could write a compiler this way. It shows how you could compile a while statement to an imaginary assembly sequence. The technology behind this is based on term rewriting. So this means that the transformation of a certain source code tree is done by repeatedly applying transformation. This means that it's purely functional. So there is no state, no side effects, just rewriting, just transformation. To make some of our lives a lot easier, there's also support for automatic traversal, so that you don't have to hand code the traversal of a large syntax. Which is, by the way, very nice if you have to transform a million lines of code, for instance, for this application. Okay, well, the final axiom that I'm using here, the language is the environment in small talk. I think all of you agree that without the environment, without the image, small talk wouldn't be small talk. In the medium environment, it's not so radical, but in a sense, there is a link in the sense that since everything is defined using languages, we also define integration to the environment using languages. So the languages, some of the languages you have defined are contracts to the environment. The environment knows about a certain type of signal. And to show some examples, in the current version we have a language for error messages, a language for text representation, a language for formatting, pretty printing, syntax trees, and an example of a screenshot with the error languages is shown, so that the environment knows, well, okay, this is error syntax, it reads the data structure, the parse tree, and displays it to the user in the GUI. During the demo, I will show how this works. It's also easily extended, so you could easily define your own language that you would like to have integrated in the environment. The only thing you have to do is define it using SDF and define a GUI plugin that consumes this language. So, what does all this have to do with model-driven engineering? Well, what is model-driven engineering anyway? I think that in model-driven community, there's a lot of confusion in terminology stuff. Some people think that model-driven engineering is equal to stuff with UML, for instance. Other approaches think, well, DSLs belong there, or don't belong there. Or the models should be graphical, but need not be UML. But I think that, for instance, something like Magritte or Ruby on Rails is also, to a certain extent, model-driven engineering. And the same is happening now at Viewpoints Research Institute, where Omita is used to define really small domain-specific languages in order to increase the level of abstraction and to be more productive and more attention. Of course, model-driven engineering includes the stuff that we discussed this morning, like FAME and MBA Small. If you look at the literature, there seem to be some basic notions in model-driven engineering. One of them is domain-specific notations. They can be graphical or textual, and the fact that they are domain-specific means that you can better represent your problem domain and be more productive, have better quality code, or have better communication with stakeholders, and so on. The second thing in model-driven engineering that receives a lot of attention is transformation. For instance, code generation or model-to-model transformation and even basic compilation are subjects that are now getting increasing attention from the company. This is a picture that's similar to the one that Adrian showed. It shows how in model-driven engineering you have the system which is modeled by a model, and the model conforms to a meter model, and the meter model conforms to a meter model, which conforms to itself. Now, if I match this to the meter environment, then you get this. We have a system. Well, it's represented by some source code which conforms to a certain grammar, and the grammar is conforms to the grammar of grammars. And now this may sound like a word trick or something, but in the meter environment this is actually so. I mean, our language for defining languages is just one of the languages in the meter environment. So, okay. To show how the meter environment works in practice, I will give a demo. And for the demo, I have devised a really small domain-specific language which can be used to generate markup. Maybe not an interesting domain, but well, it serves pretty well to demonstrate the meter environment. This language is called Rhetoric. Here you see some of the inspirations for the language. If you know them, then the inspiration, you will see the link immediately. This is a simple example. In Rhetoric, you define functions that produce markup. Functions can receive parameters, and they can receive a block, similar to Smalltalk or Ruby, only looks more like Ruby. For instance, in this main function, you have a layout function invocation, and it receives a parameter hello, and it receives a block containing the header definition and a paragraph containing the string hello. The layout function sets up the basic HTML page, HTML tag, head tag, title tag, and a body which contains a yield statement that will be evaluated with the block passed into the layout function. Many of you will have noticed what this generates. If I run this code, then well, you get something like this. So, in itself, completely uninteresting, but very nice example. To show that it's not semantically a non-trivial language, this example shows how you define recursive menus, where you use an if statement and recursion and iteration construct to iterate over certain data and so on. Just to give you an expression on what kind of language this is. So it's actually a real programming language. It's not just isomorphic to HTML. What did we do in the meter environment to implement this? Well, we had some grammars, of course. We defined a grammar for rhetoric. We used the grammar for XML to generate the markup. We used the grammar for Java to compile rhetoric programs to Java classes, and some other tooling around it. So for instance, Rhetoric is a modular language, so we needed to build a tool to resolve imports. We also defined performance checkers so that you wouldn't use wrong tag names or have duplicate definitions, and so on. And these were all defined using the meter environment as tools. Okay, so then I think it's now time for a demo. If there are no questions. So I hope this is readable. Mm-hmm. So what you see here is the main screen of the meter environment. Let me show this first. This is a really large graph containing the import structure of all modules that were used in the implementation of Rhetoric. So, both the compiler, the interpreter, the formatter, the checker, the fact extraction, etc. These modules in this graph correspond to ASF plus SDF modules. So, below here you have the issues aeroplane, you see messages that, well, either list errors in your grammars or in your specifications, or errors that you have produced yourself. Here you have a navigation view where you see a directory hierarchy of all your modules. Basically, this is, represents the same information as this input graph here. So, I showed you this demo program. This is it in complete form. As you see, this is an editor, by the way. You can edit it here, and as you see, it's it got syntax highlighting. But I didn't have to do anything for syntax highlighting because syntax highlighting can be derived from the grammar. And if I write a little comment here, generate parse now. Well, interesting, I composed the rhetoric grammar here and the Java grammar here, and both have the same comment convention, so this leads to an ambiguity in this comment. That's why it's bad. But anyway. So the syntax highlighting is derived from the grammar, and you get that for free. And you can customize it, so if you say that, well, this is a comment, then it should be highlighted like this, and so on. So what's happened here actually is you edited the term, which is text, and it got immediately parsed over my grammar from the little language. That's why I see highlighting. So if it's parsed, it means that the parser is somewhere, and I can show you that it indeed is. So here you see the parse tree of that little snippet of source code that I just showed. And these kind of features are essential if you are dealing with ambiguities and so on to debug your graph. Yes, I can show that. It will be a large screen. I hope there's a question. So this shows a tree including all layout, and so you see that it contains a lot of information. But here you see slowly. This diamond shows that there is an ambiguity. It can be parsed like this, and it can be parsed like that.
So we do the parse for it.
Yes, exactly. True. Even with cycles, if you write cycling terms. So this is the parsing part. By the way, if anyone has questions during this demo, please ask. What you also see here is that there is this rhetoric menu in the beta environment, which is automatically generated if I play by the rules of the environment. So if I have a specification in a subdirectory here from called run, then it will add this menu item for my language, and it will invoke the transformation defined in the module in that language. So I can so there it is. So you see here that I've generated the XML corresponding to that snippet of rhetoric, and you also see that it's also highlighted. So it's really a tree-to-tree transformation, and this is only a rendering, namely and rendering produced by Ern parsing. And to make this a bit more nice, I also made a format for XML so that you can see what it is. All this is based on ASAP SD. I showed a slide with the error message of the invalid XHTML tag. That was actually a real error that I made in this example once. I made a typo in this function. And then, well, if the function isn't defined, then the interpreter will assume it's an HTML tag. But, well, it's still an error, so we want to prevent it, so we made a checker. And because it's a menu, you can run this checker. Change the font of this. It also says where the error is, and I can click on it, and the cursor jumps to the offending place and gets the script too. Well, this is a really simple error, but I hope it's clear that using these language-based integration stuff, you can enhance this environment using IDE features for your own language. Another thing is that often you want to have more insight in the semantics or structure of your program, which is not easily represented using parsing. So this is where fact extraction comes in. Fact extraction is basically collecting information about a piece of source code, but representing it in relational form, so that you can query it, enrich it, using relation algebraic operations. But not only that, you also might want to visualize this code. And that's also one of the other sublanguages interpreted by the meat environment. If you generate these sets of relations, then the meat environment will display them. I opened here the fact pane and store concept unfolds, where we have a certain sets with information that I've extracted from a rhetoric program. So for instance, I made a basic relation containing statistics on rhetoric programs. And now here you see that this relation can be visualized as a pie chart or a bar chart or whatever. So for instance, here you have it. And these visualizations are in essence also extensible. So if you write the right plugin, then you can add your own visualizations, register to a certain set of relation type, and they will be included in the meter. Currently, you can have pie charts and bar charts and graphs, for instance, for call graphs. That's your domain, unfortunately. And another nice thing is that the built-in data type, again, a little language, is the language for source origin. So here you see area in file, blah, 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 and I don't know, can't show it now, but it includes the column number and line number of a certain element. And this means that you can always trace back certain facts to the actual source code. So if I click here, I jump immediately back to the location where the main was defined. I showed you before. I think that's about it for the demo. If there are any questions about the demo or things that you might see, they are right.
Well, including that, so that too, 13 for the can you summarize the question?
Oh, sorry. The question is, it looks like an impressive tool. Couldn't you integrate it on an existing platform? Well, actually, our current work in our group is working on integration with GIPS, because, well, we have some IDE features, but we would like to have others too. And if you base your implementation on something like GIPS, you get all things, all sorts of things for free. For instance, version control, project management, what have you. Also, better integration with Java would be possible. I know this is maybe considered bad by something, but it's, you know, if you just have transformation, sometimes it's nice to have some kind of backdoor or a way to pull arbitrary code outside the performance.
You said that you can have all the plugins
in
your own language.
Yeah.
How can I recognize them and how they look like?
Okay, well, you can have them, and it's really easy, but you will have to program some integration stuff.
Yeah.
So, well, in the code of the meat and part. And of course, the language that you will use is just defined in the syntax definition. For instance, the language of errors, I can just show the syntax of errors here. Well, you see here, checkers return a summary which contains the list of errors, and errors can be info warning, etc. In similar vein, these other languages. Okay. Just to summarize, I have listed here the lines of code that I've used to develop all these library components. Well, these lines of code don't mean that much in itself, but I think it shows at least that you can make a comprehensive tool set for a little programming language in a short amount of time. It took me 2 weeks, but well, I knew the environment, so that's kind of cheating. But so we developed this, the grammar itself, including disambiguation. We developed an interpreter to prototype within the environment. After that was kind of settled, we developed a Java, a compiler to Java, which can be used in, you know, arbitrary dynamic context and circuits or whatever. We developed an import resolver that reads the files and combines them and so on. And we developed the checker and the effect extraction just in, well, say, 5,000 lines of code. And some of them are reused for systems. So for instance, the Java grammar, which is by the way Java 1.5, is produced by someone else and would just be reused. Since the same holds for the XML grammar. Accept attributed grammars, I don't know what you really mean by that. I mean, our parser accepts SDF grammars. And I know of some SDF grammars that you could call attributed, but I think you mean something else. Do you mean an attribute grammar system?
You said that the Java grammar was done by something else.
Yeah.
By somebody else. But,
So the SDF part of the environment is also used in other tools and other research groups. They also develop grammars. And well, this Java grammar happened to be there, and it's open source, so it is readily used. Well, to summarize, in the meat environment, all data has syntax. That's all there is. There's only a meta level, and you compute the source code.
computation is transformation. That's sometimes a burden, but for transformation and programming language implementation, it can be really nice. And of course, you won't implement Smalltalk or Java or something similar using this technology, but for domain-specific languages, where the level of abstraction is really high, this can be a really good toolset for defining such languages. So I also discussed how domain-specific language engineering fits within the model-driven engineering paradigm. It's not the only thing, but it's one of them. And I've shown this rhetoric as a case to show how the meta environment more or less works. So this ends my presentation. I think there is time for questions, so if you have any.
I played with an environment a couple of years ago, 3-4 years ago. So at that time, I was frustrated. What's the status of the project? Because at that time, I didn't run my web app and gave up that a couple of years because it was unreliable. So it didn't work most of the time.
Well, a lot of there seem to be have been stability problems 3 years ago with this media environment. Well, I can say that I have no problem with it at all at this moment. A lot of stuff has happened. We have a new GUI. The tools have been re-implemented in Java. It's better than ever before, as always.
Papers then we were talking about the highly mathematical system because it's very well rooted in mathematics.
Yes.
But the parser was lacking in some proofs of correctness. Has it ever been, or is this still a unfounded system?
I don't know of correctness proofs of this particular implementation. So there are correctness proofs of TLR, that algorithm has some extensions to it, but I don't know if there's any correct proof of scanless SVLR, which is power of this.
So it's still a little messy.
How would you compare this to the work that Alessandro Wirth is doing on Ometa?
Well, the comparison to Ometa is, of course, obvious in a sense. There are a number of differences. Ometa uses a different parsing formalism. So it's based on the parsing expression grammars, which are a restricted class of context-free grammars, which you don't have the risk of ambiguity, which is very good, but you have to write your grammar in an awkward way. This may be a drawback. The ambiguity may be a drawback for SDF when you're developing a DSL, but it's essential for other applications that the meta environment is also useful. For instance, reverse engineering, renovation, and so on, where you have to deal with legacy language that are in the vehicles. So you have to deal with it in a sense.
Okay.
So that's one difference. The other difference is in Ometa is embedded in users parsing actions in a dynamic language. So as you are parsing, you are evaluating something, Smalltalk, JavaScript, or whatever Ometa is based on. And that's something that we don't do, we just rewrite parsing. So that's it. But if you look at the applications of Ometa, defining little languages or little subdomains, then it's quite simple.
Thanks.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that talk from ESUG 2008, held in Amsterdam, the Netherlands, in August of 2008. If you did, head on over to syncomsmalltalk.com and check out the podcast area. We have a weekly podcast and lots more content where this came from. You can also send feedback to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com. You can head on over to the Industry Misinterpretations group on Facebook. the Smalltalkers group at Ning, you can head on over to iTunes and subscribe to our podcast, and of course you can go to Podcast Alley and cast a vote for us.